but we're much better than what we showed against them, and this is what we're going to show them tonight. No doubt in my head. Let's go, guys. Go.
Listening to the 90 Plus Podcast. Here's your hosts, Ben Righetti and Sebastian Pereira.
All right, guys, we made it. We are here at episode 25. It's a Thanksgiving special. Myself and Sebastian, as always, bringing you all the latest news and updates, everything around the Vancouver Whitecaps. We're recording this late Monday night, so it is Thanksgiving for us. By the time you guys are probably hearing this, probably going to be Tuesday or later in the week or whatever, but it's Thanksgiving. Hopefully you guys have had a safe Thanksgiving. I know I have. I know Sebastian has too. We'll hear from him in just a second here, but yeah, guys, episode 25. I've really enjoyed this entire journey right now so far from the 90 Plus Podcast. We started back in February, and you know, we took on and off again towards when the season got suspended. We didn't really know which way this podcast was going to go. But MLS's back came around and the 90 Plus Podcast came back. We started getting some guests on. You guys seem to really enjoy it. Our Twitter started to get a little bit more of a bigger following at 90 Plus Podcast. Go check us out on there. But yeah, Sebastian, we're here, episode 25. It's Thanksgiving. I'm thankful for the 90 Plus Podcast, all of our listeners, and obviously, you know, my friends, my family. Everyone being safe and everything. Sebastian, happy Thanksgiving.
Ben, thanks for having me on again. You know, as you said,
what do you mean, thanks for having me? You're like, you know, it's like me saying you, thanks for having me on. It's a team, you know. Don't say it's 50-50.
No, but you know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, thanks for having me on. I mean, it was
pleasure.
A lot of people don't know the story of how 90 Plus started. And Ben reached out to me on Twitter. I mean, we obviously knew a little bit about each other being from the same BCIT program, but no, thanks, Ben, for reaching out to me. And you know, it was all Ben's initiative, really, to really get this thing going and say, hey, man, let's start a podcast. Let's start talking about the Whitecaps. And yeah, it's been great. So thanks, man, for getting it started. And as you said, it's been quite the ride. We've even been through a whole pandemic. This podcast has been through a pandemic, so it's crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's been great. It's been quite a ride. We've been able to meet a lot of new people around the industry as well, which is great. And yeah, thanks to all the fans as well. I'm also very thankful for my friends, my family, and continuing to hope that everyone's in a healthy mood and, you know, to stay safe during these times. But yeah, it's been quite a ride, as you said. And thankfully, we have something good to talk about today as well.
We do. It's a Thanksgiving miracle. I don't know if they exist, but damn, it feels like it. It gosh darn feels like it right now. Miracle. The Whitecaps, for the first time in donkey's years, they won a game. They beat Real Salt Lake the other day 2-1. It was somewhat impressive. We'll dive into that.
Oh, impressive.
It was the fact that they came back was impressive. They were losing 1-0. Okay, okay. Kralak, in the 37th minute, I think he grabbed the opener off of a cross and some poor defense. But I mean, stop me if you've heard that before, Sebastian. The Whitecaps, they rallied back, they made a couple of subs, and then they got a little bit lucky getting an own goal. Douglas Martinez off of his head, off of a free kick whipped in by was it Baldissimo, right?
It was Baldissimo, yeah.
It was Baldissimo. So he, you know, he's straight away coming off the bench, making an impact, tying the game up at 1 off of the own goal. And then Lucas Cavallini, his second game winner against Real Salt Lake, his third on the year. Unfortunately, I can't use the line that he's got the same amount of goals as missed penalties. I've used that a couple of times this year on the podcast, but regardless, he's up at 3 goals, 3 points for the Whitecaps. They went on to hold on to that lead. They won the game 2-1, and we're moving on. LAFC, you know, redemption for that 6-0 beating, but more on that towards the end of the episode. It was, let's be honest, like, anyone that watched that game, obviously it's down in Portland, so no fans, it's our home away from home or whatever. Anyone with eyes that watched that TSN broadcast or listened on 1040 or whatever, they could tell it, you know, that wasn't a sparkling performance by the Whitecaps. It didn't, you know, inject me with confidence that, oh, this team's making a push for the playoffs. The fact that we won doesn't mean that we were, I don't want to say we weren't the better team in the day, but that doesn't mean that every time we play Salt Lake, we're going to beat them just because we've beaten them twice. They're a solid team. We got a couple of lucky bounces. Obviously, the own goal is probably the biggest one of note, but it was good. It was good that It was good that we won. It wasn't a good game, but it was good that the Whitecaps left this game with 3 points.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, especially in such a tight Western Conference right now, Mark Dos Santos and his team will get and take 3 points any way they can. It doesn't matter how they win right now. As long as they get the 3 points, that's what matters to them. And you could even tell in MDS's post-game presser, he wasn't happy. Like, we expected him to maybe be a little bit more out there and maybe a little bit more happy with the performance, but he wasn't happy, and he knew his team kind of really got scrappy with it, and it was obviously a scrappy game. There was a lot of fouls called, but they were kind of lucky to get away with the win in a sense as well. And you speak about the own goal. That's obviously the biggest bounce the Whitecaps might have this season. Maybe this win can really guide them forward towards, you know, getting a little bit of momentum towards the final months of the season, and see what they can do. It's obviously been a frustrating season yet again. We have seen a little signs of promises here and there, but it just has to be better from this team. And I think even though this performance wasn't something that MDS will say to the guys, hey, you guys need to do this again, we can do this again, whatsoever. This is not one of those performances. This is just a little win here that they can build off of in terms of the emotional side. They can say, okay, guys, we won a game. We're out of our little slump in a way. So let's just try and build on that and play better football. But now let's try and play the football and get results at the same time.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you know what? Coming off of the loss the other day against Portland, and then obviously, like you said, we went in that little bit of a slump. We lost to San Jose as well. This Real Salt Lake game, it was huge in terms of points in the standings. Before this, the Whitecaps, they were 4 points out of the playoffs. If Real Salt Lake get this win, then that gap increases to 6. The Whitecaps have, I mean, I hate to say this, but Colorado currently hold the last place in the Western Conference, in the playoffs at least, above the playoff line.
And they might not even play for the rest of the season because they had, I think they had 3 of their next 3 games have been postponed because they have a little bit of a coronavirus blowout. So
yeah,
who knows if they might get, you know, kicked out of the league for a temporary moment of time because they're doing really bad with the COVID situation amongst their team.
Yeah, it's tough to say. And that was basically going to be my point. The Whitecaps have played 4 more games in Colorado. So, you know, it looks good that we're 1 point out of the playoffs. And the only thing that really separates, so it goes Colorado at 8th, which is obviously the final playoff spot. Houston Dynamo are tied with them at 19 points. They're losing on goal difference. And then the Whitecaps are 1 point below Houston, and they're vastly below goal difference there. So realistically it's obviously the Whitecaps, you know, it's an okay position to be in. I'm sure Mark Dos Santos a month ago would have liked to have won that close game against Portland, not lose 3-0 against San Jose, at least keep the scoring down a little bit so it doesn't really hurt their goal difference as much against LA. So it has been, even though the slumps has been, you know, a couple of losses in a row, they haven't been good losses. They haven't played well. They haven't scored many goals. They haven't, you know, it's so it was good, even the fact that they didn't play well and that one of the goals that they scored was an own goal and whatever. 3 points is 3 points, and you'd be stupid right now in the Whitecaps organization to turn that away. We've got LAFC coming up. Obviously, like we said, big 6-0 loss last time out. It's going to be tough. They're missing a couple of pieces, LAFC are, I should say. But it's LAFC. They've got a lot to play for. They're trying to close that gap down between Seattle and Portland and Sporting KC right above them. So they're still, you know, giving it all. They're not putting it into easy mode or whatever right now. And I think Real Salt Lake, they've got a very difficult finish for the rest of the season. They play LAFC twice. They play Seattle once. I think they play, I think it was Colorado as well. Oh, they, you know, if things pick up in that situation. But, Real Salt Lake, I think they were looking ahead, and I don't want to say they were presumed that they'd get, you know, all 3 points or whatever against the Whitecaps, but they have bigger challenges ahead. And they were saying if they can get 3 points against the Whitecaps, maybe they can, because they were in a slump of their own. They'd lost 2 games in a row before that. So, you know, hopefully if, in their minds, if they could pick up a win or even some points, they could snowball that, move it forward, and then they can have that momentum and they can break their slump. They can have that momentum going on to these bigger games against tougher opponents. They overlook the Whitecaps. And the Whitecaps, they're a dog team, man. They fight, they scrap. It's not always pretty, and realistically, it's very rarely pretty from the Whitecaps. But it's how they play, and Marcos Santos is looking for their style, their identity. I don't want to say they found it, because it's not a good one, but they've got heart. That's right now, that's their biggest thing they've got going for them. They're a fighting team, so... it's 3 points is 3 points, but you'd hope it's better in the future.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think if we're going to talk about the game here, I'd say probably the one positive that I took away from this game was the performance of Michael Baldissimo off the bench. Mm-hmm. I mean, yet again, he just brought that sort of energy into midfield, and we saw it all game long where, of course, the referee plays a part in the game because he called out so many fouls. I don't think I've ever seen such a game where, like, there's stoppages, like, literally every 2 seconds, I'd say.
Yep.
But, yeah, it was crazy. And that also affects the flow of the play, obviously. And the midfield just didn't have it in them throughout the game. I think Owusu and Bekele at times can look like they're pretty decent together, and they do have the qualities to, you know, play with each other and form a decent partnership, but I just don't think that they perform very well. I think the 4-4-2 is a formation that doesn't benefit the Whitecaps, and playing against a team with a three-man midfield like RSL, you know, you're always going to have RSL. I'm speaking from RSL's standpoint. They know they're always going to have an extra man in midfield, and when you play a 4-4-2 or a two-man midfield, it just gets it that much harder, and a lot more people have to run around the field. So I think on the night, the Whitecaps just didn't get anything down through the middle. And that was in large part to Owusu and Bekele, that they just couldn't get anything they just couldn't start the play from back to front. At times, I did think Bekele was really good with his tackling. I think he had like four or five tackles on the night.
Led the team in tackles, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and he led the team in tackles. And there was one moment where it stuck out to me that he was able to pluck the ball like at the top of the box, and he was able to transition the play to Montero, something we saw that him do a lot against Seattle in that loss. It just didn't have much success. But here again, it was a similar thing that Bekele, a little small thing that Bekele was able to do, and he helped play the ball forward, but it just didn't transition into anything very good because the Whitecaps, as we know, like to pass back quite a lot. So other than that, I think the performance of Michael Baldissimo coming into that midfield was really good, and he literally changed the game on his own. This is why people in MLS use the hashtag play the kids. I mean, he literally changed the game. He played the ball in for the own goal. And he was also part of the buildup towards the second goal with the ball towards
Adnan.
Adnan?
It was Adnan. Mm-hmm.
And so if that doesn't tell MDS that he has to start, then I don't know what does, honestly. I know MDS has said that he admires the 4-4-2, and it's a system that Cavallini also likes to play in as well. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think it's the best system right now for this Whitecaps team. And if we get to see a midfield of Owusu, Bekele, and Baldissimo, like for a full 90 minutes, I'm sure they can definitely play a lot better with their transition game and create a lot more opportunities going forward. But again, I think that was the main positive from this game for me, Michael Baldissimo's performance off the bench. And I guess I can also translate that to a negative with the performance of the midfield.
Yeah, and I'm glad you kind of opened that door, because I was really bursting to break that down. I went off a little bit on Twitter during the game. I was very critical of the center of the park with Bekele and Owusu, and you know, if I had a penny for every time that I've said that they need one more, or that they don't bring enough to the table when it's just the two of them, you know, I wouldn't be recording this podcast right now.
No, you wouldn't be on episode 25.
I know. God, we'd have a sponsor by now. But anything. No, but yeah, no, I mean it. Owusu and Bekele, I'm sounding like a broken record here, but they're too flat. They're too one-dimensional. They're both – I really like the two of them defensively. I think Owusu has struggled in the last couple of games, and people that are just judging him on the last three appearances or so, I think – a little bit harsh on him, I think, because we saw what he could bring to the table at MLS's back. I was very impressed by what I saw there and what I've seen in spurts here and there. But realistically, what he's done over the last couple of – he's just in a bad slump. He's in bad form, and every player goes through times, situations like that. But, you know, regardless for the reasons or whatever, the two of them just isn't enough. And again, the Baldissimo factor of knowing that there's someone as impactful as three-dimensional as Baldissimo, someone who tackles, someone who passes, someone who's vocal, someone who's, you know, just a workhorse in the center of the park. Knowing is, I love having the fact that we can bring him on, but I'd prefer that fact more if we had a center of the midfield that was more capable of pushing the ball forward. If we had, say, three Michael Baldissimos, or even two Michael Baldissimos and like a Gianni Obikel, I would be, no offense to Leonard Owusu, but I would be much more confident being able to bring on someone like Baldissimo who can impact the game the way he does if the starting pair were impactful enough, just the two of them, which clearly they're not. I have got some stats here. I've just got to close a whole bunch of stuff here.
I think, on my laptop. just to jump in real quick while you brought those stats, I do think that Owusu and Bekele have the quality to be good in this team, and we've seen it again. You said it yourself. Like, we've seen flashes here and there, but I just think, like, as you said, they are in a bit of a bad slump, and I don't think they work in that double pivot. Obviously, Bekele's a little bit more of a double pivot guy, but Owusu's not that. He can't cover as much ground, honestly, and he's not a double pivot guy. He's more of a guy that likes to venture forward at times. He did play as a cam in Ghana, and he can make the passes upfield, but since he's in that deeper lying role, he can't really do that, and he has to be more conservative with when he goes forward and when he comes back to defend. So I think it's a question, and I've said this a lot during the season. It's a question of not, are these players good? Because I'm honestly going to say this right now. I look at the Whitecaps team sheet and every lineup they put out, and I'm like, there's quality on this in the starting lineup. There is. Absolutely. But it's just a matter of putting all those pieces in the right spots, and that's ultimately down to the coaching staff. But we'll talk a little bit about that more later. Just go ahead with the stats now. That's just what I wanted to say on Bekele and Owusu, because I do think they have the quality to make this team a lot better.
Yeah, so I'll quickly run through these two, and then we'll get into player ratings, and then closing, you know, before we look at the LAFC matchup, we'll just talk about whatever else is on our mind. I've got one. Sebastian seems like he's got one or two on his mind. But yeah, we're gonna play a quick little game, and Sebastian doesn't even know this, but I'm going to tell him right now. I've got several stats in front of me, and I'm going to tell you the stat, and you're going to tell me how many they have, so how many shots, how many key passes, that sort of stuff. And no cheating, Sebastian. I can't see your screen, but no cheating. Gianni Obikel, how many shots in this game?
Shots?
In full 90 minutes, how many shots did Bekele have?
Zero.
Zero. That is correct. Leonard Owusu, 65 minutes. How many shots did he have?
Zero.
Once again, you sure not cheating, Sebastian? Key passes. Gianni Obikel, how many did he have?
Key passes. Gianni, I'm going to go with one.
Wrong. Zero. Leonard Owusu, how many key passes did he have?
I think I'm going to have to go with zero.
Are you sensing a common trend here? That's right, Sebastian. Going over to defensive stats. I mean, we're looking here. We've got Leonard Owusu, who is known for his defensive, you know, skill. That's what I really like to see with him when he's in good form. Take a look at how many clearances he had, Sebastian.
Clearances, two?
Wrong. Zero. Interceptions for Gianni Obikel. Very defensive player. He worked like a dog in the middle of the field at times. You know, he played the full 90 minutes. Interceptions, what do you think? How do you think he played in the middle of the field with interceptions? How many did Bekele have?
I don't want to say zero, but I'm going to say zero.
It's zero. I'm saying so many. And this is over 90 minutes for Bekele, 65 for Owusu. That is nowhere near good enough for the middle of the park.
Can we get an infographic made for this? We need to put this on.
God, can I get a punching bag for this, please? No impact going forward. Minimal impact on defense. You're leaving a lot of it to Eric Godoy and Ranko in the middle of the field. Eric Godoy was my man of the match. We'll get to that in a second. He had a very good game. So did Jake Lewinsky. Ranko played relatively well. Ali Adnan, touchy subject. Not going to touch on that just yet. But there's just... I'm going to get into player ratings and we can talk more about it in there, but you can just see like why I get so frustrated with the lack of involvement that these two players, and you know, I don't want to say it's the two players, the 4-4-2 doesn't benefit them. There's no secret about that. But like you say, Sebastian, there's talent there. I've seen Owusu really impress me and be the best player in the park at times. Gianni Obikel, I loved what he did against the LA Galaxy. I know he's shaken off an injury, but he had some good performances in those home games at BC Place a couple of weeks ago. These guys are good players, and they can make it work. But they have to make it work week in and week out. If you're in the middle of the park, just the two of you, it has to be clicking, and it's not. And MBS is stuck in his ways. I don't want to, you know, be hard or harsh on the guy, but you know he's stuck in his ways here with the fact that he wants the two of them to work, and I do too. I want it to work, but it hasn't yet. And with 5-6 games left in the regular season, and you're a point out of the playoffs, and something as important as the middle of the field isn't clicking and isn't working, it's time to change. And like
games are won in midfield.
Yes, sir. That is correct. It is also correct that we are moving on to player ratings. Just because I can go on for ages and ages about, you know, this percent of the midfield topic. And quite frankly, I can record the next 25 episodes on that topic, but I'm not going to. It was a 4-4-2. MDS seems like he's found something that he likes. Cavallini, I asked him in the post game, and he said he really enjoys it. He says he likes it with Freddie Montero because he does a little bit more of the creative sort of passing through and stuff. But yeah, so it's a 4-4-2. Evan Bush in goal, I went for a 6.5. He didn't have much of a chance on the goal. He took on some tough collisions. You know, he got rattled up once or twice. And he was pretty good on the ball. Like, at one point, he had, like, the fourth highest most passes on the team, like near the end of the first half, which obviously, you know, isn't a good thing. And I come back to my thing about the midfield being out, both of them being outplayed by the goalkeeper. But, you know, that's a whole different can of worms. But yeah, it would be higher if he had more saves. I'm not complaining. There was only 3 shots on target and he made 2 saves. So he didn't do a whole lot in terms of actually, you know, saving the ball, but that's not his fault. So I went for a 6.5.
Yeah, I think a 6.5 is fair. I mean, as you said, he didn't have much to do, and he did have a couple injury scares. So it's good to see that he got back up to his feet real quick on those. And we don't have yet another Whitecaps goalkeeper out injured. So
that was a little scary, I'll be honest.
It was scary. I honestly thought he was coming off on that first one as well. Like, that first one looked nasty. So hopefully he continues to be okay, and hopefully he continues to really get a hold of his position here. I think in terms of distribution, he kind of impressed me at times with the one play you said, Ben, in the game. So but in the other games, he's kind of looked a little bit slackish in distribution. I thought Brian Meredith has been pretty good with his distribution. So, I don't know. It's a question of do the Whitecaps keep this guy or not, but he's just going to have to play a little bit more and come up bigger in the big moments to see if he can make some of those big saves that Kripo and Hassall have been doing for the last 2 years, basically.
Moving on to defense, Jake Nowinski, Mr. 100. It was his 100th appearance, so, you know, congratulations to him. I gave him a 7.5. He was very energetic. He had, you know, he was very involved on defense. He got forward a little bit on offense, not as much as maybe I'd like to see him. But realistically, it's just a typical Nowinski game. He led the team in interceptions. He had 6 clearances. He's honestly right now, he's got my vote for player of the MVP of the year. He's just been so consistent, so reliable. I'm 7.5, just a typical Nowinski performance for me.
Yeah, I think a 7.5 is fair. Maybe even a 7, I'd say. I was a little bit frustrated by the goal the Whitecaps conceded, it's the second time that RSL scored a goal against the Whitecaps through that play and that back post ball from Michael Chang to Justin Miram. So, and the weird thing as well is that exact same ball was played to Miram literally 5 minutes before that goal was scored. So it's frustrating for Jake, but I think you can't blame him too much on it. Other than that, he had a pretty decent game. And again, he continues to show why he's one of the Whitecaps' best defenders and most consistent players as well. He's coming with slide tackles, blocks, everything, you name it. And he can even get the ball a bit forward as well. So Jake's probably, as you said, he's probably been the most consistent, or not the most, probably the team's MVP, I'd say, as well. So yeah, another good shift from Jake Nowinski.
And then next up, my man of the match, Eric Godoy, a 7.5 for him for me. On the time of Nowinski, but regardless. Impressive performance. He led the team in block shots. It's kind of hard to describe his performance, but he was just good. He was solid. He made tackles. He made some, honestly, some pretty impressive passes, and especially in the second half, some long stretch balls out wide, targeted one towards Cavallini up front. He was just, I was very impressed, and, you know, he's working back. I'm glad to see that he's playing 90 minutes. He's, you know, he's looking good. He's looking like his old self again, because, gosh, that, you know, at one point, the Whitecaps really needed him to step back into this lineup, and he has in a big way. So 7.5 and my man of the match for Eric Godoy.
Yeah, Godoy was really good. And I honestly, we just talked about Jake Nowitzki, who is, who's probably got our vote for Whitecaps MVP of the season. But if we're talking on paper, who's the Whitecaps best defender, it's definitely Eric Godoy. And he has this little thing in his performances where he doesn't really try much to, like, be that presence at center back. Like, he's not, like, a flashy player. Like, it's not as if you're going to, like, look, watch a game and you're going to pick him out and say, oh, wow, like, he's absolutely, like, shutting down everyone. No, he's just kind of there, and he's doing his own thing, but he does it in a really quiet way, and it's good. As a defender, that's good. So he's definitely putting in a shift, and he was my man of the match as well. I thought he was really good, and he's definitely got to be a big part of the Whitecaps moving forward. I think they really need to get the spot next to him nailed on. If they can get a really good player next to Godoy, I think we can have a really decent back line.
Next up in that back line is Ranko. Interesting game from Ranko. He led the team in pass accuracy and passes and clearances. But it just, it's like, it, that sounds good enough. But to me, he just wasn't all there defensively. He was a little bit all over the place, position-wise, like where he was in the field. Incredibly on the goal as well. And brutally outplayed on that goal. That just has to be better. I don't know. It seems very harsh, I think, because I gave him a 5.5, and I think it sounds harsh, but watching that game, and I'm, you know, I played center back, you know, in my playing career, I'm a center back, and I like to see them succeed, and I like to think of myself as quite, you know, aware and smart and just in that sort of defensive stance sort of thing. And I don't know, there's something different about Ranko these last month or so. And it's hard to put my finger on it, but I feel like you know what I'm talking about. And I feel like a lot of Whitecaps fans and viewers and media know what I'm talking about. But it's just hard to pinpoint, oh, this is why he's, you know, on a downward trajectory over the last month or whatever. It's hard to pinpoint, but there's just something off. And the second I figure it out, I'm going to bring it up on the podcast. But for right now, I don't know, a 5.5 for Ranko, bad play on the goal, position-wise a little bit messy, his defending wasn't totally sound, but distributing the ball, he was all there. So a 5.5 for Ranko, but yeah.
I think we can kind of relate that point to the Leonard Owusu and Johnny Obikel that we talked about earlier. The fact that we know these players have quality in them and they can really bring that ball-playing style that MDS wants for this team. So I think it's a case of that, what you're trying to explain, Ben. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like that, because I would say the same thing. Ranko does have a lot of quality, and when he came into this side back in March and then he made his debut in the MLS's back tournament, we saw how good he was playing out of the back, and we definitely saw him and said, wow, like, this guy could really be like the next Kendall Waston even, or like,
yeah,
he could really like make himself a name for himself here in Vancouver with his ball playing center back skills. And he's a really strong guy as well. So I think it's a case of him not putting his best performance in, but also we know he has that quality in him. So to me, it wouldn't be surprising to, you know, see him come back with a better performance. And I know he has it in him. Like we've seen it before. So is it a question of the system? Again, we don't know, but it was a little bit of a sloppy showing from Ranko, but here's to hoping he bounces back, because we know he has it in him to bounce back.
Wrapping up the defense, speaking of sloppy showings, Ali Adnan, I gave this, again, this seems harsh, but I gave him a 5. I really wasn't impressed by him, and I've said that a lot this year. But, you know, I'll be the first to admit when I'm wrong and when he plays well and when he can shut me up and stuff, but he had 18 turnovers, which is the most from any player on the field in that game. His defense was shaky, and quite a few times, you know, this is partially the fact that he's a wannabe midfielder and then he gets caught up quite a bit of the time. But a lot of the time he left Ranko isolated a lot, and I noticed that early on, and that trend carried out throughout the whole game. Lots of times he didn't support him as much as maybe he needed to, or he didn't get as tight and as compact. So regardless, 18 turnovers, position-wise, a bit all over. Didn't contribute a whole lot. I know he counts as getting the assist on the Cava goal, but I don't know. Even the cross went straight to the defender, so I don't know. A five for Ali Adnan, but yeah. It's just
that. I can get what you say, because like it's not the same Ali Adnan we saw last year, where he would drive forward, but he would drive forward and he'd give you like the end product. Like he would get to the byline at least, and he'd skill pass a couple of players and create spaces for his teammates. And we haven't seen that much, we haven't seen that too much this year from Ali Adnan. So I think it's a lack of final product for him. And again, he's probably not in the groove because the team missed 4 months with the pandemic and stuff like that. So he's probably a little bit off, but it's a player we know who has quality in him, and he can balance that going forward and coming back as well. And we know he can do better in 1v1 situations. At times, I agree with you. Like, I've seen games, especially in this past little slump, where Adnan can dribble forward and he just chooses like the wrong option. He'll choose to cut inside when instead he should be passing it forward, or being a little bit more conservative, or playing a ball in behind, whatever. But instead he chooses to dribble, and he doesn't end up dribbling well, as we know he can. So I don't really know what to rate him in this game, because I think
it was a weird game.
He was all right, but he did play a bit awkwardly at times. He left a lot of spaces open. We know Ali Adnan's going to be a little bit iffy on the defensive side. So, I think I would go for a 6.
Okay.
I mean, 6 is average, but
I was thinking of rounding up to a 5.5, but yeah. Okay, yeah, so a 6, between a 5 and a 6, somewhere in that.
He did get better as the game went on, though. I'll say that.
Oh, I can agree to that. Mm-hmm. And then moving into the midfield, in front of Ali Adnan, Russell Tybert, someone who I've said this quite a few times. I think at least this season, Tybert has played the best when he's out left mid rather than just a center midfielder. I think that he does a good job at retaining the ball, distributing it, moving it well. That was not the case tonight, or not tonight, the other day against RSL. Second least amount of passes from one of the starters. He just never got involved. I went for a 5.5 from Tybert. Maybe I could get a 6 for him too. Same sort of thing for Ali Adnan, that it's a weird game. Sometimes his positioning wasn't always there. I don't know. It just never seemed to click for Russell Tybert. So a 5.5 for Rusty at left mid.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of times I was watching the game and I almost forgot that Tybert was on that left side, because there was just quiet. Nothing going through that left side at times. After Tybert came off, there was a little bit more play down that side. At times Tybert can be good on the left. And against San Jose, he was particularly pretty decent because he had 100% passing accuracy, and he was also getting a little bit more forward. He connected passes as well. But I just think they need to use that spot on someone else. I don't know if they're playing Tybert there right now because Milinkovic still has a knock or something, but that spot can't be Tybert's designated spot. Know what I mean? Like,
can't be.
You need a pacey winger there who can go 1v1 and can be direct with.
If we had two Dahomes, that'd be perfect. If we literally had two Dahomes right now, that would just, icing on the cake.
Yeah, for sure. So 5.5 is fair for me because Tybert was nowhere to be seen in this match.
Yeah. We've already discussed the center midfield, so we'll kind of rip through these quickly. Owusu, 4.5, and Bekel, 5.5, just because Bekel got a bit more involved defensively. But, we've already talked quite a bit about them. I'm going to turn gray if we talk about them anymore tonight. 4.5 Owusu, 5.5 Bekel. I'm hoping you agree with me.
I think it's fair. Again, we're not going to talk too much about them, but it's just what we said before. They have the quality, and you win games through midfield, and the Whitecaps were very lucky they didn't have to depend on their midfield to win this game. They were pretty lucky to come away with the win, as we said before. But they definitely need to improve in that area, and Owusu and Bekele need to step up. We know they have the quality, and I think they are both better in a 4-3-3 system. So here's hoping we see that soon, and they can probably gain some confidence from this performance as well.
Mm-hmm. At right mid, just talked about him for a second there, Christian Dahomey. I gave him a 6, and this, again, another weird way to rate him. It was kind of difficult. He worked really hard. I'll give him that. He worked his tail off in that game. Lots of energy, lots of effort, but not a whole lot really got done from it. He was involved more in defense than most games, which I was quite impressed by. I know that, you know, he's a typical sort of maybe more of a winger than an out-and-out midfielder, but, you know, he came back, he defended well, he got into good shape, he was assisted by Nowinski down that right side. But yeah, it didn't quite click for him in that game. I think, again, a part of that could be the center midfields not really being there for him a whole lot, not distributing as much out wide to Dahomey. But yeah, I gave it a 6. He worked hard, he had lots of energy, and I liked what I saw, but it just wasn't enough. So for that, I'm giving him a 6.
Yeah, and you know, with Dahomey, you're always going to get a lot of energy. But I think he has been in a little bit of a slump as well. He hasn't had pretty good games, I'd say, since the RSL game, where he was really good in that game, the first RSL game away from home. So I think it's just a dry spell for him. And I look back to, like, earlier on in the season, and we'd see Dahomey, like, running down that wing, and he'd be making runs in behind. And at times he made really good runs, but nobody was playing him the ball. And now we just don't really see him making those runs. I don't know if he's being asked to be more conservative and staying a little bit farther or a little bit more of a deeper block, I'd say. But yeah, I think he has to step up as well. I think what really kind of threw me off a bit was the Cava goal, where, like, somehow Dahomey's not able to put that in himself. I think that was pretty worrying, in my sense, like the fact that he wasn't able to get that under control or laid off to maybe even Cava. Thankfully, he laid it off to Montero. Somehow he was able to do that. But I think the fact that he doesn't finish that is kind of a little bit worrying, a little bit, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And I really hope he can bounce back with a better performance. We know he's capable of it. He's again, we're basically saying this for every single player here in these player ratings.
Sounds like we lost. Honestly, I just calculated this. The average of the midfield in these player ratings is a 5.3. And we won. Like, it just, it's like we said, it wasn't a good happen. Win. It sounds like we lost the way I'm bummed out and we won.
Yeah. I said this to Ben before we started recording. Like, I honestly felt like we lost that game because it just wasn't a good performance. And well, I'll say it again, the Whitecaps were lucky to get away with the 3 points here. So, as I've said before, for a number of these players, hopefully Dahomey as well can bounce back and gain some confidence from the fact they've gotten the 3 points now. So there's a little bit more pressure off their shoulders and they can put in some better performances here in the near future.
That's our midfield. Moving on to the two strikers closing out our player ratings. I got Freddy Montero at a 7 and then Lucas Cavallini at a 7.5. I'm doing the two of them together, as you can already tell. a 7 for Montero. I liked his passing a lot, and I think that's what I enjoy most about his game, and that's his most valuable asset to the team right now, especially when we play this two-man midfield and there isn't a lot going forward. A lot of the creativity, a lot of the the passes, the through balls, a lot of that does come from Montero. He had the third most passes on the team. He had 10 crosses getting in towards Cavallini, and obviously Cava in the air, that's his strong suit. I think a 7 for Montero is fair. As an out-and-out striker, he's not the best, but it's what he does when he's on the ball in the middle third almost. That's where he's most impactful, which isn't usually a good thing for a striker, but in this case it works. So it's a good thing, trust me. And then Cavallini, for me, that was the best game I've seen from him this year. It was a big goal, a big winner, and his aggression, obviously we've seen that throughout the year. Sometimes it gets a little bit too much, but he mostly got it under control. He didn't let it flare up into a red card, which is always good. But he was making runs. He was aggressive. He was putting a lot of pressure on the defense. A 7.5, it was, for me, I don't want to say I was impressed, but if he can deliver performances like that every week, I will be much happier going into recording with you every day or every every session. So a 7 Montero, 7.5 for Cava to close out the player ratings.
Yeah, Montero for me, I mean, I've said it so many times on this podcast before, but he's the glue to this Whitecaps attack. And
you don't say.
And he's really their number 10 right now. Again, yeah. he really brought a spark into their play. And sometimes you feel sorry for the guy because he's just like that one guy who wants to get everything going and it doesn't really quite fit into the way he dreams it to be. And he wants the team to be successful, but there's just not that many goals on their side right now. So I think it was a good performance again from Montero. Probably one of his more quieter ones, I'd say.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
But again, it was a good showing, and despite the Caps law or the Caps won, they almost even though they won, I think you could still desire a bit more from Montero and his play. I think he still needs to do a little bit more, be a little bit more involved than he was in this last game. Apart from that, he was pretty solid. And Cavallini, I thought it was one of his best games, I'd say. There were moments where I did find he was a little bit sloppy at times with his aggression, and he would miscontrol the ball a lot. That's something that I've noticed with Cav ever since he arrived at the Whitecaps. He just can't really get a hold of the ball, and he's as he said, he's not going to be a guy that's going to carry the ball 25 yards upfield like Montero. He's going to be in the box and wait for the service, and that's exactly what he did on his goal. He's a poacher, so he perfectly finished ball. And I think it's definitely a performance he can build off from. He can gain confidence from, because he did make runs. And at times, I remember a play in the first half. It was probably the first 15 minutes, I'd say, where he switched play wonderfully. He was able to get away from a couple RSL players, and then he switched the play to, I think it was Tybert or Adnan on the far side. So more of that needs to happen from Cavallini if the Whitecaps want to be successful.
So that is our player ratings. Just as we sort of wrap up this episode a little bit here, I've got a little stat here that I found really interesting. Well, I've actually got two, but I'm going to tell you both of them, but I'm mainly talking about one. And then that's going to kind of segue into Sebastian. He's got a little bit of, you know, a little bone to pick, I guess, with MDS. And then we'll take a quick look at the LAFC game before we wrap up episode 25 of the 90 Plus podcast. So I do have two things. One is just a random side little thing that I found about an hour before we started recording that I just thought was fun. A website, 538.com, they have rated every single professional club team in the world. I don't know if it's every single team, but in a lot of the big leagues, in a lot of countries, they've ranked every single one of them. There's 637. And from what I can tell, I haven't, in depth studied this list. I've taken looks at it, and from what I've seen, it seems to be, relatively accurate. Sebastian, out of 637 teams in the world, the Whitecaps, the Vancouver Whitecaps, our beloved Vancouver Whitecaps, they rank at 559th. I think it came to, 87 places above
last.
78. Sorry, I had some Prosecco with my turkey for dinner. Like, that should just say, I mean, they're the lowest ranked team in the MLS. They are above the likes of Birmingham and Blackpool. They are below El Paso and Dundee United up in Scotland. Wigan is as well. They're only 18 places ahead of the Whitecaps. So, we can hold our own if we go to the lower leagues of England. In terms of MLS, it's not looking great considering we're like 30 places behind the next team, which is FC Cincinnati, but
which is pretty accurate.
I would say that's pretty accurate.
Doing too well.
I would say that's accurate. So that, I think that 538 is a reliable source. That was just a fun little tidbit I found. Before moving on to this next piece, which is what I did want to talk about, regardless of where the Whitecaps ranked in the world, before that ruined my Thanksgiving. So Peter Galindo on Twitter, he tweeted out, so the Whitecaps were seconds away from outshooting an opponent for the first time this season until a late RSL chance from distance made it 8-8. Vancouver has outshot their opponent three times in 51 games under Mark DeSantos. And I like to think that Mr. Galindo is quite a reliable source. He does work for Sportsnet. I would say Sportsnet is also quite a reliable source with this sort of stuff. 3 times in 51 games, Sebastian. I'm going to let you spiel off into a little bit about MVS here, coming off of this stat. But yeah, that's... I'll let you take the reins on this. I just wanted to, you know, I'll poke the bear. 3 in 51. Give me your thoughts. I mean, give me everything on MVS for you.
Everyone saw the graphic that was showed. I think it was before
San Jose game.
San Jose game or the Seattle game.
Pretty sure it was
on TSN. It was shown on TSN, and it was. We talked about it in the last episode, I think. So if you haven't heard that episode yet, go check it out.
Episode 24. This is 25.
Episode 24. Yes.
Yep. You've got it right this time.
But yeah, you can plug this stat right in there. It goes along with everything in that stats infographic. I think another one of those stats that was in that infographic was the Whitecaps have only scored one goal or less in 34 matches, and you can really combine
35 now. 35 now. Let's go. We're moving on now.
But you can really plug those two stats in together. The fact that they've only outshot their opponents 3 times under Mark Dos Santos in 51 games. That's insane. Like, I don't understand.
That's why we're 559th in the world. There's a reason.
I don't understand how that's like for me, like, it's hard for me to describe what I'm feeling, because
yeah,
I'm not surprised in a way, because we've seen the Whitecaps play and they've always not had the most shots per game, obviously, but it's just such a ridiculous stat for a professional soccer team. And knowing where the Whitecaps have come from, and you know, 2017, 2015, mm-hmm. where they both had really good seasons. Even 2016, 2018 were pretty good because they were just outside the playoff places, but they still had pretty decent seasons in terms of goals scored. Goals against, it was pretty poor, but they still offered that playing style, and they were still, it wasn't very much a playing style under Carl Robinson. It's more to refer to as a robo ball, but it was entertaining, and the Whitecaps made chances off of it. And it's crazy to me to think that, obviously the stats are there and they show it, but it's crazy to me that the Whitecaps have only outshot their opponents in 3 games. Mm-hmm. I think it goes to show how much the midfield impacts the attack, because it's obviously been the main issue this season. I don't think, if I'm correct, I don't think we've seen a consistent midfield throughout the season. I don't think there's been like,
nope.
I think there's only been one time where MDS has named the same starting 11 twice consecutively, and we just haven't seen a consistent midfield. And with every team in MLS, you need a consistent midfield, and that's going to affect either the defense, the attack, or both. And we've seen it with the Whitecaps in every single game this season. Mm-hmm. You can even look at the Seattle Sounders, Ladero, Jao Paulo, who was really good against the Whitecaps a couple of weeks ago, Roldan. I can go on a list, and they've got a really solid midfield there.
I just want to say, I'll let you keep going in a second here. Mark Dos Santos, in the post game press conference after the RSL game, he was asked about lineup consistency and how he feels his team adapts to new formations and, you know, new players coming in and coming out and whatever. And he said that you look at a team like Seattle, and that he right away, like in the press conference, named the starting 11 for Seattle, and it's been pretty much unchanged for a lot of the season. And DeSantis has said he's been able to look at that and say, you know, it's good that they have that consistency, but at the same time, teams can plan for that. Teams know how each player plays. They can analyze it. If it's different every now and then, or they bring in a couple of new players for a different game, then it's a little bit more difficult for other teams to react to. The Whitecaps don't need to be playing these mind games. They need to be focusing about what's on the field and putting out their best 11. I'll let you, you know, take over a bit in a second here, but I just thought that was, I don't want to say a bad thing to say by MDS, but I was quite taken back by the fact that he's like looking and playing these mind games when realistically, you know, other, like him worrying about what other teams are thinking of the same Whitecaps starting 11, that should be way down the list on his priorities. That shouldn't be what's going on in his mind when he's picking the starting 11, especially when, like we said, 3 times in 51 games that this has happened, this, you know, rotating midfield that doesn't seem to stay the same, this formation that doesn't seem to stay the same. It affects the players, it affects the offense, the defense, the flow of the game. It's everything. So I'll let you take over, but I just thought I'd point out that him saying that in the press conference, I was quite taken back about him saying that.
Yeah, and that's the first time I've heard that. Like, I didn't go back and watch the press conference at all from the RSL.
Bad journalist. I'm kidding.
Oh, God.
I'm kidding.
No, I've been busy. I've been busy with school.
Oh, all good. It's a long weekend. Don't worry. It's
yeah. But, yeah, it throws me off as well. Like, if you want your team to have an identity, like, express the
do
identity.
Something about it.
You'd yeah. rather, like, I'd much rather have a team play to their identity and play by what they are good at, play what the management, the ownership, play what the coach gets behind you, the messages in training, whatever. If they play to a system week in, week out, and they still lose, I much prefer to it like that instead of the Whitecaps, you know, trying a system every week and, oh, it's not working. I wonder why it's not working. Well, because obviously you're trying out a new system to these players. It's pretty much, I'm going to say it, but it's pretty much torture to these players having to play in a new system week in and week out. And I mean, I'm just reacting to this because it's the first time I've heard this, but it's just crazy to me that you would really put aside the fact that a team's going to try and, you know, find a way to beat you in your system instead of saying, okay, guys, let's make some minor tweaks to our system, really minor, and then we can get at the opposition and see what they come with against us. But first and foremost, as a professional soccer team, you have to have that identity. It's something we've talked a lot about in the past couple of weeks on this podcast, and the Whitecaps just don't have it right now. And we can probably point that all the midfield problems, the consistency of these players as well, to MDS. And MDS is a good guy, don't get me wrong. I think he's a great guy, and he's a really tactical guy, and he loves the game. But it's only a matter of time for me, honestly. And I don't want to say MDS out right now, but it's getting to the point where you see all these players, they're not performing consistently, they're not performing at their best. And you look at someone like Ranka, who we talked about earlier, and he came in and I mean, obviously his debut was the San Jose game in Orlando where they lost 4-3, but he played well. Like, he played well.
Yeah.
And you look at someone else like, I'm going to say Bakel, who played really well against the LA Galaxy, and somehow he's fallen down with his injury. Owusu as well, he came in really well at MLS's back, and he looked really sharp with his forward passing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Baldissimo being benched, you can point all those things to MDS. Like, why are these players all of a sudden losing their trend and losing their playing, like losing their identity in a way as well? They're losing their what makes them unique as players, I'd say, as well. So I think MDS is just not getting the best out of his players. It's something also that we can see with Baldi as well. Like, he's being put into a double pivot midfield when in reality he's a much better midfielder in a three-man midfield. I think he played the double pivot against San Jose and he just wasn't as good. I mean, he was still decent, but you could tell he just doesn't fit in the double pivot. So I don't know. I don't want to go on for too much because we've already probably passed our limit on this podcast, but it's crazy to me. Like, damn.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't know what else to say. Honestly, damn, that's
you go back to the three games that the Whitecaps have outshot their opponents. Like, if I were Axel Schuster, I'd go ahead and say that this upcoming offseason is probably the biggest offseason in the club's history, because it's go bust or
I'm gonna jump in here just because we, like you said, we are slowly wrapping out of time here. And like, this comes back to an issue that honestly seems like years ago, but it was only a few months. Mark Pana is leaving the club, and you know, the whole idea of this club is, you know, taking away all the power from Leonard Uzzi in the front office and splitting it up between Schuster and Panez, and then going back on it. And you know, they went in and out and got all this fan engagement saying, you know what, we came last year, that's behind us, we've got a new face of the team in Cavallini. We're bringing in all these, you know, new exciting players. Front office is switched up. Give us another chance. We won't blow it. They have blown it. I'm sorry, regardless of how the season ends up, and I've said this before, and I feel bad saying this, I hope this team doesn't make the playoffs. If this team makes the playoffs, people will be under the illusion that everything's okay and that it's fine and that MDS keeps his – I don't want to say he should lose his job. I don't want to say he should keep his job. But people will be under the illusion that he's doing enough and that these players that he's brought in are performing and that his style and what he's implementing on the team is working if they make the playoffs. And the fact that we're 1 point away from the playoffs genuinely scares me. I would love to see the Whitecaps go on a playoff run, you know, make be cup contenders, be a big underdog story. I'd love to see that. Chances are that's not going to happen. I hope this team doesn't make the playoffs, because then changes will be made, front office, on the fields, in the changing rooms, you know, on the whiteboards. Everything is going to be stripped. And I don't want to say it's going to be stripped and start over, because that's basically where we were last year and look what the hell happened. But it's close. And the fact that it's so close to not being, you know, really looked at because we're so close to the playoffs. And I think realistically, if the Whitecaps make the playoffs, regardless of how they do, MDS keeps his job and he'll be back next year. For the good of the club, I'm not going to say if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but regardless, I think the playoffs right now is the worst possible thing for the Vancouver Whitecaps. And with that,
I think the only thing saving Mark Dos Santos from his job at this point is probably the whole coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah. If this season isn't shortened, and because I mean, what, we've got 5-6 games left. They're not going to fire him now. If he does get fired, it won't be now. It's that simple. The fact that the team is so close to the playoffs and that the team is so close to just getting over the line and being, you know what, let's regroup in the offseason, let's figure something out. There's no point in doing that now. And if this
something has to change, like as you said, whether that be with the ownership, whether that be on the field, in the dressing room, whatever, something has to change with this team, because as we've said so many times in this episode specifically, these players have quality and we've seen it a lot of times before, and they just can't keep dropping off like this, and you can't just keep not using them to the best of their ability. I think Baldissimo is a guy that has to keep starting consistently, and for me, without him in the lineup, this Whitecaps midfield is not built enough for MLS. I look at games across the MLS weekend, like this weekend, and I watched the Inter-Miami-Houston game, and they were playing passes like as easy as 1-2-3, and this Whitecaps team can't do that for some reason. I don't know why. It's the mystery of the Whitecaps.
It's starting to piss me off, if I'm being honest. It's starting to really annoy me.
Yeah, and the club needs to figure out a way. It's going to, as I said before, this might as well be the club's biggest offseason ever. And we've had, arguably last offseason was probably a big one as well, but this is going to be the biggest one considering the Mark Panis announcement and the way they threw him out of the club.
Parted ways.
But also the fact that this team is not playing good football, the signings, just for some reason we know they can do well but they're not doing well. There's a lot of question marks, and the number 10 that we've been asking for as well, there's no creativity in there in the midfield. It's a big off season, and I'm going to say this. I'm really excited to cover it, but it's definitely a big ask for this football club to get it over the line and, you know, turn everything around and make this team a playoff contending team. Make this team an MLS team again, because, as I said, it just doesn't look like they can go up to par with a lot of MLS teams considering how well and how easy it is for other teams across the league to pass the ball. So, yeah.
Well, from the sounds of it, 559th in the world isn't enough for Sebastian.
Let's push
for under 500. Let's be there. You know, let's crack the top 500. Let's, you know, we've got, you can be there. Yeah. And I do think with that, I think we have actually run out of time for the Galaxy. I keep saying the Galaxy. My apologies. The LAFC game in a couple of days here. But you know what? I apologize, and I think Sebastian does too. We did miss the podcast after the San Jose game. Sebastian's a full-time student. I'm a part-time student. I'm working part-time. You know, life just gets in the way. We love recording. We love hopping on here, and you know, episode 25. It seems like it's been a good venting episode. We needed to get a lot of that out of our systems.
For sure.
We apologize for missing that one. We're gonna, you know, we've only got a few weeks left in the year, in the season anyway. Gonna hope to grind and stick to our plan of recording every Wednesday, And every Sunday, obviously.
Thursday
and Sunday. Good God, I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. Yeah. It's late. I think with that, that's basically wrapped up this episode. Sebastian, thank you for joining me as always. Episode 25. It's been a ride to get here. The next 25 are going to be even better. We're going to continue growing, doing our thing. We're going to get on some more guests toward the end of the season. It's always fun bringing on people to talk with. Not that you're not entertaining enough. But yeah, no, we've enjoyed 1 through 25. 26 through the 50 is going to be a hoot and a half as well. Any last words, Sebastian, before we close this one out?
No, once again, guys, thanks for the support as well. Thanks for listening to us. We really appreciate it. And again, this all started with a simple text message on Twitter from Ben. So it's been quite the ride. And again, we've been able to do so much great stuff together. So it's been a hell of a ride, and hopefully cheers to the next 25, and who knows, maybe the next 50, the next 100, who knows. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can find us on Twitter as well at 90 plus podcast. You can find Ben on Twitter at Rigetti Ben. You can find me on Twitter at Sebastian P74, and you can find all our work on there. Obviously I've been a little bit more preoccupied with school. So I haven't been doing the usual on Whitecap stuff. I've been slacking off a bit, I gotta say. But yeah, you can look forward to a lot more BCIT stuff from me. I'm busy with BCIT stuff, so you can look forward to a lot more BCIT stuff on my Twitter. And Ben's continue to write for Last Words, so continue to check his articles out as well. And yes, keep it locked here on 90 Plus Podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got some big stuff coming up in this off season. A little bit of a, you know, shake up to the system, you know, getting some wheels in motion. Hopefully, you know, this coronavirus doesn't, you know, foil our plans for that. I think we should be good, but, you know, don't want to make any promises. But you guys should be excited for next season, be excited for the rest of this season. Still got lots of stuff, Whitecaps content to talk about. So until then, oh gosh, I've messed up this outro. And until then, till next time.